Accession number 9590, reel 5.
Mr. Duffield, reel 5.
Yeah. The captain announced that the ship would take about 5 hours to sink. The engineer looked at me, he said, he'll be lucky. And, because he obviously didn't think so, you know. And so he said, right, oh, let's get the other one out. So, because they're always stored in pairs, lifeboats. One inboard and one slung out, is already out on the davit and fixed, you know. And so we then manoeuvred the other one in position, got that slung and lowered down, and then got that filled with people and lowered that into the water, and that pulled away. And then I noticed then there'd been one lifeboat lowered from another position where somebody had managed to release the falls, and the boat was just hung there on one fall, so it was now useless, you know, and they couldn't then get the other boat out because of that. And another lifeboat which had been lowered was busy flooding because somebody had forgotten to shut off. There's a drain on the bottom of the lifeboat, because when the ship's, you know, when it's pouring with rain, they have covers on and all that, but they get water in them sometimes. There's a permanent drain on them, and there's a little valve you shut off. Somebody hadn't bothered to shut it, and it was just sinking full of people in the water. And then the ship started to lurch about a lot. And just then there was a bashing came from a hatch cover, and we could see a face there. And the chief engineer was then trying to get this, was an engineer from below, and he'd crawled up a ventilator duct and was trying to get out, but this was all locked up, and the engineer was trying to get him out. He wasn't having much joy getting him out, but he was trying hard to get him out, you know. And so then he told us to go and get onto another set of davits and get another boat down, which we set forth, and we did, you know. And as we got this other boat down, the ship started to lurch some more about, and
the
started to lurch about rather more violently. And so the chief engineer said, get down to the deck below and jump off the ship. And so we didn't need any second time. We nipped down the steps under the main deck and then just jumped over the side. So I'd just be about, you know, 20 yards from the centre of the ship, and I jumped.
What time of day was this?
This is dawn, yeah, when this happened. Very early morning, you know. And I noticed the chief engineer was continuing trying to get the engine room man out of his hatch as we were going. He still continued. He may or may not, I don't know whether he did get him out. You know. I never saw the chief engineer again anyway. And so I just jumped in the water then. And then, while all this had been happening, one of the frigates, that would be the Stalwart, had come up and stuck its nose at the back end of the ship, but under the stern of the ship. It had put its bows there, and people were then transferring across from the ship, and in particular they were getting lots of injured people who had been injured in what had gone on below and had been brought out, and getting them out of there. In fact, some of the people that were mainly responsible for organising this were actually, there was two padres on the ship, and these two padres had been very strenuous in their efforts to organise the rescue of people from down below, because the torpedoes had gone in the rear compartment, had brought decks down, and the decks had fallen on top of people in the lower holds, the lower parts of the holds. It also destroyed cabins above it, and all there, that lot had been shot down into the holds, and you know, due to the explosion. So lots of people had been killed outright, but lots had just been trapped or just been injured or so on, you know. And they were busy organising that way. And of course they'd organised groups of people to help them, you know, and to get these people across to this ship and there. And so when I finished up in the water, the Stalwart was still positioned there, getting these people across, you know. But as I hadn't been in the water more than a minute, and the ship, you could see the bow starting to rise very quickly out of the water. And the Stalwart kept on trying to come forward to get more and more people off. In spite of it, it was a very hazardous thing it was doing for two reasons, of course. One, it was making itself a target to the submarine, because you know, lots of ships were destroyed that way by the Germans, who thought nothing of, you know, if they saw a frigate, they're going to destroy it regardless of who it was rescuing. But the other frigate was out dropping depth charges all over the place, trying to keep the submarine down to give the Stalwart a chance. Then the bows just went very, they went up very, very quickly. And then they got so high, it started to throw people off the bows. It was no longer possible to transfer anybody. And some were just clinging there, and others falling off. And then there was a sound of crashing crockery inside the ship, and there was a piano went flying. You could hear that going. And then it occurred to me, I'd read about the fact when ships went down, and if you were near them, it sucked you down with it. So I had no desire to be alongside the ship, which was where I was. and now I'd jumped in the sea, and I had a uniform, a great coat on, the old border trade jacket. Now the border trade jacket is not quite up to floating a man with a great coat on, and the water was here with me.
For 2 hours.
Yeah, and I was having a job to keep that up.
Could you swim?
Only on my back I couldn't turn over for the life jacket.
But were you able to swim in normal life?
Yes, I could swim. I've never been a good swimmer, but I could swim. Anyway, I started kicking my legs and thrashing my arms to move away from the ship, but I never got very far away. I don't suppose I got more than 25 foot away when the ship went vertical. Then it just slid down in the water. I was quite near to it. And it just went down like a big lift going down.
Quickly?
Oh, yeah. It didn't take more than, 20 seconds. Shook, like that. Then one minute there was a ship there, and the next minute there was nothing but wreckage, and bodies, and people.
Was there much suction?
None at all, for me. And I spoke to somebody later on who'd been actually hanging on the railings on the stern when it went down, and he survived, but others didn't. Yeah.
So how did you survive?
Well, I don't know why, so I just was finished up, was just still on the top of the water, you see. Well, not far away there was one of the lifeboats that I'd lowered, so I went, I sort of dog paddled myself away across to that, and I hung onto a rope on that. Now the bloke who was sat in the lifeboat, he objected to me sort of being there. He said, if there's too many people hanging under this, we'll sink, you know. So I didn't take much notice to him. And I looked around, and about 20 yards ago I could see a big raft. Now the ships in the war used to have these big permanently fixed rafts that were they're angled at the side of the ship, and all you need to do was to slash a knife and it release the rope, and the thing would self launch. And they were just big oil drums encased in wood, really, you know. And I could see this, and there was just one person on this thing. So I thought, well, it'd better if I tried to get across to that, see? So I made my way across to that. It really, I found it very exhausting, but I did it, you know. Well, you know, you'll do anything when you have to. And I got there, and all I could do when I got was hang on exhausted. Now, as it happened, I knew the chap on the raft, because he'd been on the same mess deck as me. And between us, I managed to haul myself aboard, and I got myself there and sort of sat there for about a minute while I sort of got myself all together. And then we hauled other people out that had the same idea, and eventually we got a raft full.
Were you cold?
No, the sea was quite... It was about 200 miles north of the Azores, and it was quite mild. You know, warmish. Eh?
Were you covered in oil?
No, there was no oil. And, it was just no oil about it all. You know, it wasn't a tank or anything like that.
Had you been apprehensive of sharks?
No, I never give them a thought, no.
Were there any about?
There was none about, to my knowledge. I think they're a bit north for sharks, really. Yeah. And anyway, I sat there. Now, in the meantime, the Challenger, the survey ship, had been moving in the area, picking people up from the lifeboats. And then it made its way and came alongside us. And there was big nets hanging down from the side of the boat. And there was also seamen on the nets, and they assisted us on these nets. Then we climbed onto the deck of the Challenger.
What kind of treatment did you get on board?
Oh, they were great to us. And the British seamen, you know, be merchant navy or be a naval person, they're great. Yeah. And as soon as I got on deck, one of them come up to me and of course dripping. He says, "You better come down my mess deck." You know, they don't have, this ship didn't have a big crew or anything like that. So, you know, I'd be lucky if there was 50 on it, you know. And so he went down to his little wee cabin he had down below, and he dug out his best Sunday uniform and he lent it to me. So I took off my wet soaking clothes and then put on this nice dry clothes, so at least I was comfortable. Sailors, you know, the ordinary sailor suit, you know? And then he, in the meantime, he went along to the garden, he came back with hot tea and so on. But then a funny thing happened, because when I'd sort of had this cup of tea, I thought, well, I'd better find this uniform of mine, because I'd left it in the passageway, and I went out and it had gone. I never saw it again.
It just, so you don't know why it vanished?
No, my wallet was in it, and my pay book. I eventually got my pay book back when I got onto another ship, but I never saw my wallet again or my uniform.
Did you have much money in it?
There was only about, well, I had a lot to me. I had £7, you know, but that was a fortnight's pay, you know, and more than a fortnight then, yeah. And
were you any worse the wear for the experience personally?
No, none at all, no.
Had there been many people lost?
About 300. Now, you remember I mentioned the two padres? Well, one of the padres survived. But the other padre, he was last seen down in the hold with a man who was trapped. And he was praying for him. He never survived. He was later on, many years after the war, was awarded the George Cross. He was Padre Pugh. P-U-G-H. He's just a man, you know, who had his beliefs and really truly believed them, obviously. He'd worked like a demon rescuing people. And when he got this man where he couldn't rescue him, who was dying, he thought he would. That was his duty, and he stayed with him.
When the Anselm was torpedoed, was there much panic on board, or were things orderly?
Oh, things were orderly. There was no panic. There was only the people that were severely injured down below were obviously, you know, screaming and things like that, which anybody would. But the rest of the people behaved in an orderly manner.
And what about getting into the lifeboats? Was there a scramble for it?
No, no, people took their turn.
Then the frigate took you where?
Well, I was not on the frigate, I was on the Challenger, somewhere on the frigate. No, but I was on the Challenger. But both the ships, in point of fact, after they stayed in that area all the day, and they were obviously, you know, doing the decent thing by bodies, you know, collecting the bodies and wait, you know, making sure they went to the bottom, you know, and identifying them as well as they could. You know. But then all night we sailed, and then when we got the next morning, we woke up and we could see on the distance was a large liner, and this one, point of fact, was an armed merchant cruiser. It was a ship called the Highland Monarch, yeah? So the Navy had taken over, and this had come, you know, obviously from somewhere, it had been the nearest big ship, and we all transferred to this ship then, which was much more comfortable, of course, being a big liner. And by that time, the only clothes I had was my greatcoat, which I'd found. Never found me ordinary clothes, but my greatcoat I'd found.
Where did the liner take you to?
To Freetown.